You got some good news for us, Dad?
I really do. You know, it's 420 all month here, so y'all have fun.
April 2020. You got some.
Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The pictures have got small.
Your first one's on us.
Hey, you're tuned in to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Grigadonna, and with me, as always,
Richie Byrne.
Buddy, today is Richie, so great to see you. We got a great guest.
Let's just tell the audience, 20 minutes ago, we didn't have this guest.
We didn't have a guest.
We did not have this guest.
We're scrambling.
And Joey, our great producer, Joey St. John, banged up the name and everything. Did you see that?
Miracle worker. This man is a miracle worker.
We actually went early because we were backstage talking and we realized that it needed to be heard.
Yeah, if we waited any longer, we were going to exhaust ourselves. So listen, he is, you and him are very, very close. So I think you need to bring him out. Bring him to the stage.
Well, we're bringing out one of the greatest of all time, a Long Island legend, and the king.
An American legend.
The king of warm-up. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Joey Cola. How about that?
Joey Cola is boy. He already forgot us on. That's how old he is. He was. Hey, Joey.
Joey.
Well, I hear them, but I don't see them.
Joey.
We're inside the China cabinet.
Well, look to your left, or your right, or wherever. I don't know. It's back.
Hey, there we're on your computer.
Hey.
Oh, there you are! I'm sorry. I couldn't find you. Where's the camera? Up here, right? If I look up here, you can see my face?
Yeah, there you go. Put your finger there, you can't.
Oh, okay.
He said.
I'm sure you've heard that your whole life. Don't put your finger there.
I just want to look at the number 7.
To the camera, Joey. Jesus Christ. There you go.
All right, I'll go back here. Can you hear me?
Huh?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you. All right. I don't even have my microphone on. I can hear you from Pennsylvania. Look at this guy. Oh, there
he goes.
You know, I have arthritis in my neck, and when I see you do that, it hurts me just to watch you do it.
I know. I get a little pain right here.
Do you?
So, man, it's hard to get guests last minute, right?
How great.
Who are we going to call? It's like, you know, it's like when the Tonight Show has to call, like, Alec Baldwin or Bobby Flay. You know what I mean? Like, someone they know lives down the street.
Well, I don't want to tell you this, but there were 10 calls we made before you.
Probably.
And had nothing to do with how much we love you. It has to do with how we know you know technology.
And we want the audience to know when we bring you on the show. Isn't this great, though, what we do here?
Phenomenal, man. It's great. I'm in my dining room. I'm looking out my front window. My friend Brian Duran is bringing preservatives to me right now. Because what is it?
Not preservatives.
Preserves, not preservatives. Yeah. Well. Preservatives.
That's an alternative to preserves.
Yeah. So he's out in front of my house.
Most people are trying to avoid preservatives. Joey is doubling down.
I'm bringing in life preservers. Anyway, he's dropping them off because he's my first advertiser. I'm letting him do it for free because he makes these blueberry preserves and stuff, you know.
Ooh.
So when I do my
preserves.
What?
Preserves or preservatives?
Life preservers. I'm going to hang them in the back. I'm doing this thing tomorrow with my live from Joey Cola Comedy Club from my living room. I did one 2 weeks ago and it got 8,500 views. So I'm doing another one. I'm setting the living room up like a comedy club. I'm just totally, lights, sound, the whole thing, and I'm doing my act. I'm dressing as if I'm in a comedy club.
Well, who's on the show?
Yeah, on one platform, it got 6,200 views. So,
wow.
And so now he's going to give me some preservatives. I said free preservatives. So I'll put him behind me. He's my first advertiser.
If it goes tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Yeah.
How do we find it?
It's on my fan page. Hold on, let me show you.
On the Facebook.
It's at www.facebook.com. The Joey Cola. The Joey Cola.
And you had how many people last week?
Hold on, let me show you.
I didn't even know they still made BlackBerry phones.
Yeah, they do.
BlackBerry Joey, how many people did you have last time?
Everything was said and done, I had 8,500 views.
After this promotion, you'll have 85 and two.
That's right. Oh, I know that. Yeah. I completely know that. So,
how are you?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm doing all right. All things considered, I'm not letting this thing break me. I refuse to let this thing come in.
I've known you for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I know that whenever anybody has anything, there's something going on, you usually get it. So I am very impressed that you don't have this yet.
Well, I'm not sure if I got it a while ago or not. Like a month ago, I had a scratchy throat, and I thought I had a fever, but I didn't. And I don't know if it was allergies or what. The thing about this thing is you don't know if you got it or not. So my son had it. He had fever about a month ago. My cousin got it. He had like 103 fever, my cousin. So I know people that have had it and are over it, you know. But when you watch the news, it gets pretty serious. So I don't know if I got it or not. I'm just staying in the friggin' house. I got toilet paper and meat. And I realized that I could probably just live on milk. Like if I just have enough milk, I could just drink milk.
I feel like I'm going to need a nap after this.
Have you been have you been doing a lot of work outside at the house? I know you love
doing a lot of yard work, planting my parsley seeds to raise my butterflies, getting the gardens together. I'm doing as much as I can outside. It's freezing, but we're painting the basement. We ripped up the carpet. So every time you rip up old carpet, all the fumes from the carpet and the dust, that gets in my throat. So when I'm done doing that, I'm coughing all night thinking, oh, my God, I got the COVID. Meanwhile, I don't. So it's from the carpet thing. But this is going to pass by. Eventually, people are going to be walking by and going like, happy COVID. Like, we got over the COVID. It's going to be like a holiday that you live through.
It's going to be a long time, I think, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I know. But it sucks. I won't let this drag me down, man. I don't really want to talk about it. I'm ignoring it. I want to just put positive out there because there's so much beauty in the world. There's so much more we all got to live for. So, you know, and you guys know, I live my life like that anyway, as if something's coming. A bullet, a bus, you know, a cancer, a heart attack, something's coming. It's just that it's condensed now. People are getting slapped around and they're going, oh my God. This might not be the answer, this existence on this planet. We're all here for a half hour, whether you get 9 years or 90 years. We're here for a half hour. So you might as well take this seriously and be nice to each other while you're here. And then and play your drum, whatever it is, comedy, welder, a carpenter, and then move on. That's it. So that's how I'm looking at it. And I'm eating a lot of food.
No, yeah.
I just want to say we're at 8 minutes and 45 seconds, and Joey took his first inhale.
Joey, the way
I love you, buddy.
The way we usually start the show, but it's too late for that.
The way we middle the show. The way we middle the show.
We do a drink, and then we have our guests tell a street joke if they know one. So I'm thinking, because we caught you last minute, do you have a drink that you're drinking or no?
I don't have one right now, but I had one before, but I can get one. Hold on. Just give me 1 second. Just give me 1 second.
Shout out to Teresa.
Teresa.
And Robert Stiro said, and Nutella. Do you have enough Nutella? They're asking about your Nutella.
Nutella. I got plenty of Nutella. Do you want some Nutella?
Yeah.
Here, hold on. Boy. There's my drink. Hold on. There's my drink right there.
All right, a little Jack Daniels. Not
there you go. And let me go get my Nutella. Hold on.
Why don't you just bring us into the kitchen? so, Richie, I'm having a, hey,
In honor. Okay.
Come on, man. Know your enemies. Your enemies. Right?
I went a little different here. I went a little different today. I went out and bought myself a little Grand Marnier.
Ooh.
And normally I drink it, you know, straight, but I don't know. I threw some rocks in there for some reason. I wanted something a little cold.
Nice. A little Grand Marnier.
Have you ever had a little Grand Marnier?
Yeah, I like it with coffee.
Yeah, it's very good. It's a nice sweet drink. I don't normally, it's really almost a dessert drink.
Oh my God, you got a tub of Nutella.
Well, you know, Rachel, is that from Rachel?
Yes.
And look, it even comes with a feed bag strap. You can just strap it right on. Nobody has to do anything.
Ray gave him a whole wagon.
She gave me 33 jars of it. And this one, this is the one she gave me for Christmas. It's 7 pounds.
So she put a lot of thought into her gift for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she knows what I like. I'm a simple man. So I got that going here. And I got this going here. So.
Well, I love it.
That's nice. She gave you that. That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Cheers to you guys.
There you go.
Joey's going to drink the whole bottle.
Bill Billy.
I did a week with Joey at in Myrtle Beach, and we had the best time.
Oh, my God. That was so much fun, Mom.
I remember when you guys were out there. I was very jealous.
I laughed so hard I thought I was going to throw up several times, and he wasn't even drinking.
Yeah.
I'm like, this guy's crazy without alcohol.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. He is the reason I'm sitting here right now in a lot of ways.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are. In this house.
Dude, I didn't bang your mother, please.
In this house. Or you did, but that's what's
going on. I'm not the reason you're sitting there.
We like to call him Joel Cola.
Yeah.
Jolie Cola.
No, because you got me the greatest job I've had for the last 11 years, and it was all you, brother.
It's 11 years now already?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And my boss is all over the TV. I don't know if you've been watching.
So, Dr. Oz?
Oh, my God. He's on everywhere. The man's working his ass off.
He is. Yeah. I mean, the TV warm-up thing is a good gig. Nobody really knew about it much until I kind of brought some attention to it. You know, back in the old days, Regis was a warm-up guy, Ed McMahon, like Joey Bishop, like those type of guys, you know?
Right.
And then what happened was it kind of lost its... nobody really talked about it because it's a position that's behind the scenes, you know? And whenever you work a show, it's, you know, you want to get all accolades to the host of the show, you know? So when that position happened for me, I did it with Jon Stewart originally, his original show back in 93. And, you know, I know Jon from the clubs. So he really cherished the warm-up. He knew how important it was. So then after that show ended, Rosie called me. I did it with Rosie for 6 years. And Rosie really recognized how important it was because especially if you're a comedian, like those two are comedians and they really realized it, you know. Then after Rosie, I went to Martha Stewart for 7 years.
Right.
And then I went to, now I'm at Rachel. Going into my ninth year there, which is great, and Rachel really, really understands.
Rachel really gets it. She really gets it.
Yeah. Our job one as a warm-up person is to protect the host, make them feel comfortable, and get them their laughs, and get them keep that show running smooth in front of those 150 people that are in front of you. Right. I mean, they're playing to the cameras, but that only works so well unless you get. You're getting the right feedback from the people that are around you in the studio, which I'm learning now because I'm doing these stand-up shows from my living room, and I'm putting my wife's got a laugh track that's going with it, so she's hitting a button at the punchlines, and even though the people aren't there, it's still something to let me hear like some kind of feedback, you know.
How funny is it that we had two Rachel Ray moments this week? Gino talked about him.
We had Gino Vento on Wednesday. Gino Steaks, G-Steaks, Joey.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because Gino knows him.
He and her are very close. Yeah,
He comes to the show every once in a while.
Now, I'm going to tell you a story. About a month ago, I was on set at Oz, and somebody said something about, hey, are you going to feed us? And I said, no, you don't want the food here. It's Dr. Oz food. It sucks. And everybody laughed, and I go, you know, you want good food, go over to Rachel Ray. I go, my buddy Joey Cola, he went over to Rachel, and he's gained a lot of weight since he went over there. And Dr. Oz goes, yeah, and you're wasting away.
Hey, real fast, Teresa just jumped in and said that she knew you from the Jimmy's Alley.
Teresa Canastacci Farrell. Yeah, I know Teresa. We're giving her a blast from the past.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joey Cola, here he comes.
You got video?
Oh, yeah.
We don't feel that.
Oh, my God. What is this? Hi. Oh, my God. I want. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I remember that jacket. I got a story about that jacket.
I remember this bit. You did it last week. In traffic while they're driving.
I've seen you ladies like on Express. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite bits.
Get the hell out of my way, you idiot.
Go ahead. That's Montreal.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, that's Montreal, man.
91?
My first comedy festival. I think that was New Faces.
Wow, well, you won't be on that anytime soon.
Oh.
Montreal just announced they are switching their date now to October. They're going to be in October this year.
That was great.
Wow, thanks, guys. See, that jacket, back when my son was little in 93, from 90 to 93, I was doing cruise ships because it paid really well. And you were in the Bahamas and whatnot. So, but I didn't want to leave my wife and my kids because they were...
Now you're in quarantine when you do a cruise ship.
Yeah, I know, right? But I was doing the cruise ships, and, once they like you, they have you on the ship a lot, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So one time a ship dropped me off at Port Lakaya in the Bahamas, and I had to get on a plane and go over to Nassau. So I get on this plane, and it's like something out of like Casablanca, like the double props, and it's like a tin plane, and half the plane, the left side was like 10 rows of three, me and like... It was like 30 people, me and 29 Bahamian nationals. And to the right of the plane was all luggage and cargo. That was it. So I get on the plane, and I'm dressed in that outfit. See that outfit you saw? I get on the plane, I'm dressed in that, because I know as soon as I land, I got to get on another ship and do an afternoon show. So I got the shoulder pads and the jacket and the tie, and it's me and the 30 Bahamian nationals. I'm sitting next to a guy with a live chicken on his lap. He's two guys. Yeah, he's got a live chicken right on his lap. So the whole flight, I got this chicken next to me, and as soon as we get off, we walk down those stairs, and this guy grabbed the chicken by the neck and just spun it around and killed the chicken right behind me. There were feathers everywhere.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I was like, where am I? I'm like, I'm dressed to the hilt, and I'm on this plane with if anybody can kill me now, no one will ever find me. They'll just see that jacket float up somewhere.
Hold on to the shoulder pads.
That's to keep me floating.
So, what was your first warm up gig? I never asked you that.
First warm up gig was John Stewart. John Stewart's original show. He had it on Channel 9 WOR here in New York.
I remember the show.
Yeah, so he had like it was really cool. He had like Pearl Jam and. It was a really hip show. It was like
that's awesome.
Wasn't Howard, what's his name, his sidekick, Howard?
Yeah, Howard Feller.
Feller.
Howard Feller was his sidekick.
Yeah.
And we shot it where Wendy Williams is now, which is right upstairs from the Rachel show. Yeah. All Mobile on 26th Street. So Barry Segunda was John Stewart's manager. And I knew him because he knew
me. How great of a name is that though? Segunda.
Barry Segunda.
You talk to Segunda.
Yeah, and then later on, I was with his sister over at one of the agencies. I forget which agency it was, but she was my agent over there. But she, I mean, he hired me to do the warm up for Jon Stewart's show, and we did it for a year. It was good, but then he went off the air. You know,
I remember meeting him backstage at Rosie.
Jon Stewart.
John and Barry. John was on.
Yeah.
The same show I was on, and John was like flipping out because it was my first national appearance. He was such a cool guy, and he like grabbed Barry. He's like, "This is his first national. Do you know how important that is? You know how big that is?" And it was. I remember thinking, "What a good guy Jon Stewart is." You know.
Oh, greatest guy.
Yeah.
I was so young. Jon Stewart was like when he was really breaking, and they brought him on Larry Sanders. He was guest hosting a lot of the late night stuff. Every sitcom had him written in somewhere where he was.
Yeah, you're right. He was.
I mean, like there was something, and even as somebody, you know, some rube from Ohio who knew nothing about show business, who was, you know, in junior high and high school, was going, "This guy is about to break. Like he is about to be the biggest comic on the planet."
Well, he put a lot of time in. I mean, you know, he used to MC at Catch. On First Avenue and 81st Street or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He used to MC there a lot. He did it for years.
Yeah,
like, you know, years ago, I mean, we used to bang around this when the city had a lot more clubs than it's got now. We used to do sets all around the city. I was one of the few Long Island guys that took advice from Peter Bales. And Pete said, I said, "Man, this is great, man. I'm on my way to becoming a comedian." And Pete said to me, "Yeah, but you got to work the city." And I said, "What? There's eight full-time clubs on Long Island." I mean, there was Laughs in East Quag, Concoma Comedy Club, East Side, Chuckles, Jimmy's in Queens. There was a million comedy clubs. I go, "Why do I have to work the city?" He goes, "Because if you really want to be seen and you want your career to go to the next level, you're going to have to go to the city sooner or later." So I took his advice and I started working. I worked everything but the comic strip because Lucian didn't pass me at the comic strip. He said, He made me wait till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, anybody.
Yeah, and then he said, "We have enough Joeys and Vinnies and Vitos here, if you know what I mean."
Dude, it's so funny you're saying that. I auditioned for a club. It's no longer open, but I don't want to say anything nasty about Booker. I got told, we already have Adam Ferrara. If we need an Italian guy, we'll call him. And I'm like, we're completely different people. I'm from the Midwest. I'm a hillbilly. Adam Ferrara is like this intellectual from Long Island. Like,
you know, sometimes it's just amazing how there's certain people who I don't know how they came by getting this job of, you know, saying, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down to a career or to a spot. But I never let that hold me back. Like, you know,
the Caesar. He lives.
Yeah. Water runs downhill, man. If anybody ever said no to me, I'd say, "Okay, fine. Some people like chocolate ice cream. Some people like vanilla ice cream. You don't like my flavor? I'll move on to somebody that does." And luckily, you know, there's enough places to work. I mean, when you think about it, you work 25 clubs twice a year. There's your 50 weeks.
Yeah.
So you get as many as you can local, but then you pick up your casinos, your private party.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Cruise ships if you want, and then you can call it a career. Forget about fame and television and being a big superstar. I mean, just calling yourself a working comedian. And those are the people that I respect. I don't respect, you know, if you get a sitcom, you get a TV show, you get a big name. If you've earned that, God bless you. That's great. But you give me somebody who's like who's been banging out the road for 20, 30, 40 years, you know what I mean, and consistently making people laugh on a local level and getting rebooked, and paying your bills, that's who I respect, you know?
Well, yep. Billy Gardell had a show. Sean Fink, dude. Sean Fink is on, Joey.
Who?
Sean Fink.
Oh, hey, Sean.
Shout out to Sean. Buddy. Sean is Joey's DJ.
Not only that, Sean is a he's still working at NBC.
Yeah,
on the he does all the tech stuff for all the NBC shows. He's a very, very big deal behind the scenes there. And he I love you too, Sean. And he's a very big deal there. And I am the luckiest guy in the world. The fact, because he's also a DJ, works for a big DJ company in Staten Island. But I'm the luckiest guy in the world that this guy said yes to me to be my sidekick with this Kevin James show.
The nighttime show, Kevin James. Can I tell you a great Sean? I'm gonna tell you a great Sean Fink story, Mark.
Okay.
Joey was doing warm up for Murphy Brown. And he had already, Sean had done Kevin Can Wait with Joey. Sean was his DJ.
And then, he's chugging that whiskey like a beer.
And then Sean did, he was Joey's DJ for Murphy Brown, just like he is for Kevin's new show, right?
Yep.
So I had to fill in one Friday night for Joey for Murphy Brown, which was one of the coolest moments in my career.
Well, really. Kaufman, you were at Kaufman Astoria, too, which is a legendary.
Right.
It's been there 100 years.
So much history there.
So I don't think Sean's ever done it with any other comic but you. So we did, and it was, and it's a hard show. I mean, it's 3.5 hours, and you're banging it out.
Yeah, sometimes 4 or 5 hours.
He's amazing. He's got trivia. He's got, you know,
amazing.
He's the best sidekick you can have.
Yeah.
And he actually, in a lot of ways, it really wasn't that hard for me because Sean was right there. He had my side. So at the end of the show, we finished, and I even walked up. I'm like, man, that wasn't really that hard at all. And Sean comes over, and he's like, hey, that was great, man. We got to work together again, man. Like, he'd never been with anybody but Joey. So he kind of was like, because he was, anytime I did a joke, he would sneak in like a little tag or something.
He's so great that way. He's got great timing. And now, he's spending a lot of time around comedians, he's realizing how he can come in and work his part. You know, it's a dance. You know what I mean?
You know what, Joey?
Him and I got the dance down so well right now.
He never got in my way, not once. Not one, even like sound effects, whatever. He never got in my way for 3.5 hours.
And he's the highest paid now he's the highest paid DJ, sitcom DJ in the country, because I said, you know, I talked to some people and I said, listen, this guy's worth his weight in gold. I said, I'll take less money so that he gets more money so he can be part of
this world,
no matter what. And I'll always support Sean Fink, his name is, guys. If you ever get a chance to see him, he's doing my daughter's wedding, Lord willing, if that happens, you know, in September. And just a great, such a talent. Not only a great DJ that could pop up music as quick as you want it, but his personality is such that everybody loves this guy.
Yeah. But it was just funny because I felt like we were both cheating on you.
Poor Joey doesn't even know this is happening.
Yeah. I'm over the hill.
I felt like Woody Allen.
I remember this was about 10 years ago. I don't know if you guys remember this, but Angie and I, right before we got married, we went, you know, we're talking about possibly leaving New York City. So we went to I go, let's take advantage. I'm friends with all these guys who do warm up. Let's take advantage and go to a bunch of tapings. And we had so much fun with you guys more than even the show. But it was so exciting because we knew you guys, and I was taking pictures with all you. Then I kept getting text messages. What are you trying to get? Try to become a warm up comic? You trying to do warm up? And I was like, no, I just have. It was like you two, RC, Dina.
What show did you go to?
You were doing Rachel, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Was it Rachel or was it Martha? This was. It was probably 10 years ago. Dina was doing Nate Berkus.
It had to be Martha then.
I was at Martha, yeah.
Yeah. Dina was
doing Nate Berkus, probably.
Yeah, and RC was doing the Chew.
Yeah, the Chew, yeah.
And we had so much fun. Still to this day, Angie brings it up all the time. Remember when we went to the Chew? Those guys were so funny. We had so much fun. And it really meant a lot that you guys would go out of your way and say hi and hook us up with cool tickets. It was a lot of fun.
It's fun, especially when we have friends in the audience. It's great, man.
The best advice Joey, and he's given me a lot of advice, but the best advice Joey Cole has ever given me was when you get a warm-up gig, other comics are like, dude, can you help me out? And you're like, there's not that much work. You know, it's hard.
There isn't.
And Joey said, just tell them they got to get up at 4:30. 80% of them
don't. Yeah, they don't want to get up that early in the morning. They're like, why do I have to do that? I said, well, if sometimes the first meeting is at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, if it's 7:30, even if it's 8 o'clock. So a lot of the comics tell me the reason why I became a comedian is so I could sleep till noon. Yeah. Well, then you're not going to be a warm up guy. I mean, this is a job.
I like everything about warm up except when it would be time to perform. I'd in my head. I'd be in my head the whole time going, what would Joey do? What would Richie do? What would
Matt, but you know what, Mark? That's how Joey wouldn't know this, but because, you know, he originated so much of it. But that's I did that for the first 2-3 years.
Yeah. I would get up and go with you guys to watch you guys. I don't have to perform or do the job. I'll watch you guys do it.
Right.
But I enjoy watching you guys work so much.
There's a lot of moving elements on a set. I mean, it seems like we're just looking at the audience and entertaining them, but we got to watch a stage manager, executive producer on the floor. The eye is always on the host. Not only the eye, the ear is on the host. So you got to watch and hear the host, and you got to keep that 150 people entertained with the whatever material you got in your back pocket.
Right.
So there's many people. And the stage manager is running up to you. Sometimes audio, sometimes, you know, lighting, and you don't know who's going to run up to you. There's a lot of people on the floor of that set. You know?
There's nothing worse for me as a warm up than when you're out there and you're going because you have to. And a stage manager walks out and looks at you and goes, like, they don't even know.
They don't even know.
Like, yeah. They can't even give you a time. You don't know how long. They're just like,
you just Yeah, you hung out. They hang out, man. And sometimes there's no band. Like, at least with Rosie, I had John McDaniel, John McDean and McDeal.
The greatest.
It was the best, man. So they had, I had full band with me. We'd play music and stuff. And, you know, sometimes, and you know, Rachel, we got a 14-minute tape in case it's really gonna, like, we had recently something broke and we had a delay, so I was able to play a 14-minute tape. So, but very rarely, I mean, you got to have the skills, your audience skills. You know what I mean? You got to be able to talk to an audience, do crowd work, have a wealth of material, and then you got to be able to come up with new stuff on the spot. And then with Rachel, we do it 3 times a day. You know, so that was a lot. When RC was doing Rachel, they were taking, like, you know, 3 hours to do one show.
Oh, yeah.
So he was on the front line. He had it bad, you know. Yeah. So
hey, real quick, we have James Matterin's listening in, speaking of warm-up guys.
Oh, he's
the Mad Dog. Look at
James backed me up at Dr. Oz one day and did a great job, even though he doesn't think he did.
Yeah, James is a funny comic too, man. Yes,
he warmed up my special. He warmed up when I did Burned Out, when I recorded it. He went out, and there were a couple of times we had to stop, and James went out and just took care of it. And really,
nice.
Having him there meant a lot, you know.
It means the world, man. It really does.
Great comic and a good guy.
Yeah, we come from the school where, you know, when we went on stage recently, I'm not going to mention names, but recently there was a comic on stage and another comic went on stage to fool around with him. Now, Richie, you and I come from that, especially here on Long Island and the tri-state area, where if one comic is on stage and another, you know the guy well enough, or maybe not, but you get to fool around with each other on stage, you know, and I come from that school where you get to mess with each other, you know? So when you're able to have a warm-up guy who's able to, you're able to interact with and help, it's like you're part of a team now. You're attacking this audience. As a team, you're getting these laughs, and you both know each other so well that we can execute it together, you know?
Right. What was the point of that story?
To have James Madden next to you when you open up your thing? I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you.
I'm having one of my transient global amnesia episodes.
I'll tell you a great story about something like that. Jimmy Dore. Do you know Jimmy Dore?
I've heard of him.
Great comic. And years ago, we were in Vegas together, and he was headlining, and I was middling. And on the last night of we were together, he kept calling back to one of my jokes. And every time he did, the audience got silent. And he did it like 3 times, and the audience just went silent. And finally, I wasn't really paying attention, and Jimmy goes, "Guys, I'm not stealing Richie's joke. I'm paying homage to him. It's a great joke." And they all get quiet, and I yell out from the back, "I didn't do the joke tonight."
So oh, my God.
That it was never done.
And he didn't watch your, he didn't watch your set that night?
No, he missed the, I guess not. He just figured I was going to, it was the Jesus, Mary, and Joseph joke, which got me rosy, by the way. So he goes, come up here and tell it. And I go, no. And he goes, come up here and tell the joke right now. Come up here. And I'll never forget, I got up on the stage and he sat in the stool and he laughed from the setup to the punchline. And he enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
The audience loved every second of it. And I remember thinking, that's a teamwork kind of guy. That's a great, you know what I mean? Like that he did that. It was just so brilliant, you know?
Yeah, that's a good thing, you know, when you can fool around with your friends on stage. Yeah. Yeah. You know, years ago at the East Side Comedy Club, we would all write during the day. You know, a bunch of us would meet at the comedy club during the day. Richie would open the door and we'd sit and write. We'd all have to bring a couple of topics to the table. Like, say I had, bananas, kangaroos, and oak trees, whatever. I'd bring those topics to the table. I'd tell everybody what I got. And then we'd work our way around the table, like 10 of us. And everybody would just spit punchlines or ideas or whatever.
I love that. I miss doing it.
And then we'd go to lunch and then come back and work on it again. And then that night, we went to the comedy club, and we would only have to perform the material we wrote that day. And everybody who wrote with you knew your act so well that if you got scared and you reverted back to your old material, we'd go, no, stop, that's old material, don't do it.
Right.
So, because the other comics were in the room, and that was a time when, you know, East Side was packed on a Monday night
with
auditioning comedians, open mic, and Long Island Laughter Company, which is the improv group that had Rosie, Bob Nelson, a bunch of people in there.
Right.
Do you think there's anything to it that a lot of crowd warm-up guys tend to be Long Island guys? Like Long Island, Brooklyn type?
Not really. R.C. Smith is originally from Ohio, and then he moved to New York. Yeah. Tom Kelly is from Massapequa. Yeah. Richie's from Staten Island. Richie's not
I'm not really. Oh, I'm Long Island now, but I grew up in Staten Island.
All right, I take back what I said.
I actually, a couple of months ago, I went to the Sunday night at the Brokerage, you know, and I'm sitting at the bar, and I go, man, I got this joke, but I don't think it fits me. And, I just blanked
out. What was the joke about?
Well, it's not about the joke, but the comic goes, what's the joke? And I told him the joke, and he goes, do it tonight. Go up and do it. Go up and do it. And I went up to do it, and I did the joke, and it got laughter, but it didn't get, like, huge laughter.
Right.
All of a sudden, I heard applause, and I looked out, and it was the comedian applauding it back in the house just because I did the joke. You know what I mean? Like, he was, like, applauding me. And then the whole crowd applauded, like, it was the greatest joke ever. But it was just the fact that he was applauding me for doing something new and getting up. You know?
Yeah, that's another thing, man. If you write a bit in your head, you got to decide whether your character can get away with saying it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you can. I mean, I've written tons of jokes for other comics that I knew that I couldn't get away with saying. This package can't say that, those words.
Right.
So I was working with Doug Benson once, and he told me I had this really dark bit. And I told him, I said, dude, do you want it? I can't do this bit. It doesn't fit me. And he goes, why doesn't it fit you? I go, I'm like this jolly stoner, you know, whatever. You tend to do a little more darker stuff. And then he goes, well, you're three-dimensional. You should be able to tell a dark joke. And it changed my attitude on that. Because I used to think like that, where it's like, oh, this doesn't fit me. But now it's like, no, this is the dark side of me. I'm going to do a little dark joke here, but I still am the same guy.
You know,
I think you can still do it. Yeah, I mean, I tend to try not to write too dark, though. But if something's really funny, I'll try it and get it in, and just go like, "You ever have a dark thought?" Like, and then say the bit.
Well, I had a joke that I love. I love this joke. I have a whole bit about music, about Paul McCartney, and I had a joke where I said that I don't have a vote in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And this joke just doesn't fit me because it's dirty. So I'm going to tell you guys the joke. And I stayed off.
Well, hey, the second thing we do on the show is we tell a joke.
All right, well, let's
so, Richie, do you got a joke for us? And then, Joey, you want to tell a joke after Richie?
Well, I'll tell a joke. Yeah, whatever you guys want me to do.
Yeah.
Yes, so my joke was, and I said, where are you going? Get what? Back to the shot you had. Don't fuck my joke up, Joey.
What? What are you?
It's Joey's, really, Joey ships.
My laptop is really slippery.
It's like Skyping with a 5-year-old.
This is what
I love you, Joey Cola. You're so damn funny.
I love you, Mother Madonna.
Oh my god! Why are you like Skyping with your family at 7 o'clock?
And a little, we got another half hour.
I know you're gonna be hammered.
We're playing a game.
All right, hold on. When you guys are writing a set, do you write it as if it's a script, such a specific direction, like pause, wait a minute, or have you been doing it so long? No.
You write bits. You just write bits. I write bits on a little notepad I have in my back pocket. And then you try the bit out on stage at least 20 times. I give it 20 times.
And then when you have it,
if it works, I insert it somewhere in my act, you know?
Right. And then when it's perfect, when you have that right where it's supposed to be, Mike Keegan steals it from you.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
All right. Don't start no fights here.
So I'm not going to tell a joke. Go tell your joke. Tell your joke. Mine's long, so tell yours.
Who, me?
Yeah, give us a street.
Well, hey, Richie, I hate to break your balls on this, but most of the people watching our show don't really have anywhere to be. Go ahead and tell a long one.
But this doesn't – the point is this joke doesn't fit me. It doesn't fit my
Tell act. It. Let's let the audience decide.
Right, so I said that I don't have a vote in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I said, but there – not many people know this. Joey, you know I'm a big Beatles guy.
Yeah.
Right. George Harrison's wife, Patty Boyd, she was a model, an English model. And George, she was stunningly beautiful. And she was so beautiful that he wrote the song Something about her, which I think – maybe the greatest rock love song of all time. Something is just a genius song. And he wrote that for her. And then she was so beautiful that his best friend, George Harrison, fell in love with her. His best friend fell in love with her. And he was so in love with her that he wrote Layla for her. He wrote Bell Bottom Blues for her. And then he ended up marrying her and he wrote Wonderful Tonight. This woman has had more songs written for her. I said, so if I had one vote for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it would be Patty Boyd's pussy.
Not what? The rest of her.
No.
Just. No.
But from now, Ben Creed does that joke. It's the greatest joke ever. I do that joke and people go, hey.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't fit my personality on stage.
No, you got to know who you're writing for. You got it's a good joke, but you got to know who you're writing for.
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly.
I'm usually this guy. You know what I mean? I'm this guy. My brother-in-law is a freaking asshole.
And I'm the guy from my mother. You don't go from my mother to Patty Boyd's pussy. You know what I'm saying?
He's close with it. It's the darkest bit you have.
Close with it. Maybe. Maybe.
You slowly build to filthy.
Hey, where are we now? We on Facebook now?
Yeah, and YouTube.
Yeah, a couple of things.
How many people are watching us now?
You're in your house.
I know, but what is this thing that we're on here? What is it? What is it? What are we?
This Joey, our producer, has some software that allows us to stream on different platforms.
Okay, so does anybody know we're here? Are we doing this?
Yeah, there's viewers. We got people that are writing in. Don't you see them popping up at the bottom?
Oh, look at this. There's people writing on the side here.
Yeah, we got tons of good people.
Private chat.
What is Lou Cimino? Hey, Louie. It's my buddy Lou Cimino. Robin Fox is here and a great comedian.
Yes, Robin Fox.
Oh, my God, she's so funny. You ever see Robin Fox do a set? Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's great.
You know, we are so blessed.
You know what I don't like about Robin Fox?
What?
too Catholic.
We, you know, we're so blessed to be able to hang around. You know, we've had this great life to be able to hang around comedians. I mean, we have to bring something to it also. But man, what we've seen, the shows that we've seen, all the different the late nights, comics, the big shows, the theaters, the clubs, the back rooms. We've seen so many great comedians. Us three here in particular, but we're part of a main group that spent our life laughing.
Alex House. Hey, Alex. Wow, Alex
House in the house.
Alex House. Is she here too? Hi, Alex. See, now she's in good shape. She works out. She jumps around. She takes a little bit of oil and puts it up and does the thing. She puts it on.
I love that. You see this? Joey, did you think it was just the three of us?
I almost thought that. I almost
thought he was on some Zoom chat.
Or I thought we were just doing it for like the producer Joe and Soul Joel.
This is just for because Soul Joel doesn't have the club running, so he needs his comedy fix. So he's making three. I'm hosting. Richie's featuring. Joey, you're closing.
Hi, Alex. Alex wrote a book a while ago about Long Island comedians too.
Oh yeah!
What happened to that book you wrote, Alex? Where'd she go? I lost
Alex. Alex used to write for the Richie Burns Show.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
Was she played Cher? Remember, she played Cher in a sketch we did
at Caroline's.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was a great show, man. The Richie Burns Show. You brought a lot of variety to local clubs, which is
that was a shame about John Callahan.
Yeah, John. Yeah, he was a great guy, man.
And I forgot you played Mama Cass.
I played Mama Cass, and I played Jesus.
You played Jesus in the first show, but then I had you came back and did another show. Oh, she never published it. She said.
Oh, she never published the book. Okay, but I played Jesus, and I had my nipple out.
You had your nipple out. Yeah, you fucked me up with your nipple. I
just thought, in a comedy club, what would Jesus, because he always had the little thing wrapped around him, what would it look like if Jesus had his nipples out while he's making serious conversation?
Right. She won a costume party playing Cher. That's cute. But
hey, real quick, Sean Fink just wrote something. I think this is great. Would each of you share your most memorable moment?
Memorable moment from a show we've done, best.
Hey, Nancy Richards, what's up? Memorable show moment from best experience.
A show we've done together, Sean. You and I have so many of them.
What we've done together?
No. Just the best show that you've done.
All right,
not together.
I'm going to tell you a story that involves Joey Cole.
Okay,
there you go. All right.
I was a brand new comedian. I was really new. I mean, it's like 1990. I still had that new comedian smell. And I was going to work at Grandpa's in Staten Island, where I live, my home. And the headliner was this guy, Joey Cola, who I'd heard a lot about. You had just won a contest.
Now I'm interested.
What was the contest in Atlantic City, Joey?
No, it wasn't Atlantic City. It was K-Rock Comedy Riot. I won 10 grand.
That's it. Right. So the night we're supposed – I had never met him. The night we're supposed to work together, you were on with the Turtles. You were on the
With Flo and Eddie because they were on the morning show, and then Stern came – was the station that Stern was on.
K-Rock. Yeah.
K-Rock, yeah.
And I happened to put the radio on, and Flo and Eddie are talking about this, and you come out. I'm like, oh, my God, that's the guy I'm working with tonight. And I thought that was the coolest thing.
Really?
And I only had 15 minutes of material, Mark, at the time. I only had like 15 minutes of material. And Brian McFadden was the middle act. I even remember that.
Wow. Great comment, man.
And I do my act. And at that point, I'm really new to comedy. And people tell me, watch out for comedians, they're jerk-offs. Comedians are fucked up. Watch out for comedians, they're jerk-offs. So I do my act. Brian McFadden goes up, and he's tremendous. What a great act.
Great, great comedy.
So many great voices and characters.
That was such a great writer.
I need the key.
So then Joey goes up. You completely destroy the room for an hour. Just crush. But every bit that I talked about, you had a bit about. I had a Michael Bolton bit. You had a Michael Bolton bit. I had this bit. You had this bit. Whatever it was, you had a bit. And I remember sitting there going, oh, my God, this guy has the same premises that I have. They weren't the same jokes, but they were the same premises. And you come up to me after the show, and you go, hey, man, we got a lot of the same premises. And in my head, I'm like, I only have 15 minutes. If this guy cuts shit, I'm dead. And I go, yeah. And you go, do yours. Yours are funnier. And I will never. And I was like, oh, fuck. Thank God. And then what blew me away, Joe, and I learned so much, you still did yours. You didn't, but you would go, Richie was talking about Michael Bolton, or Richie was talking about, you just acknowledged it, and then you did your bit. And we talked about it later, and you said, we could take a rock, the same rock, and you can make a joke about the rock, and I can make a joke about the rock.
Could you see him from different perspectives?
But it's the same rock.
Yeah, my theory is, Richie, and thanks for telling that, man. I will never tell a comic. I mean, a comic can do my act word for word. And if I can't follow it with my personality and what I have to bring to it, then I'm just not worth my salt. You know, you should be able to, like, because it's happened to me many times over the years when I was, when I was working with headliners that would go, you know, what do you talk about? I talk about this. Well, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't
right.
do that.
Right.
No, dude, but that's just wrong.
When
that's
we worked wrong. In Myrtle Beach, I did my stuff, and then you came up to me after and goes, oh, I got this bit. And then I have a bit like this, and I'm going to go up. You'll see him. You'll see him. Pay attention. And I watched you do yours, and it was turtles and marathon running. And and howling, because they were different. I mean, it's the same subject.
Yeah, everybody, every comic is different. I mean, it's how you filter out, you know, what's being talked about, you know?
Yeah, we had such a great time.
That filter over there, that filter there, that filter.
Well, and then you ended up giving me a bunch of tags on mine.
Yeah, I love writing for comics and seeing, you know.
It was fantastic.
I worked with a lot of comics over the years who went, don't do that bit, don't do this bit, don't do that bit. Had that happened that night, I would have been done. I would have been screwed, Joe.
I'm glad that didn't happen, man.
Yeah,
well, that's all part of being generous. You got to be generous. You got to. We're here to give, whether it's a physical object or it's your time or it's your consideration. We're here to give and help each other. That's it.
But you went on to do so much more for me after that. But that was the first day I met you.
Big moment.
And it. As I moved up in the comedy ranks, I never forgot that moment. And whenever I thought some comic was doing something that was close to my bit, I thought, it's your job to figure it out. It's not his job to change.
Right.
Your job to figure it out. So fucking figure it out.
That's right.
I learned that from you.
I learned
a lot from you. But
we live in, thanks, man. And we live in tough economic times now. And I'd like to turn that favor into cash if we could. So... Is there any way we can put a dollar amount on that?
No, that's not happening.
All right, so I'll tell mine, and then Joey, we're gonna have you close out the show with your story. Moment. Mine was
this is the longest show we've ever done, Mark.
I know. Joey's only on the second breath.
I'm just gonna tell a street joke. Where am I? I'm gonna tell a street joke.
Okay, so mine is I was with the great Carol Montgomery on a USO tour. We're in Iraq. It's like day 30. We've been at this for a while, and the shows have been all amazing and beautiful, and everybody was appreciative and excited. We went to this one base that looked like it was a school building that got blown up. It was very messed up, and it was all the people there that were coming to the show had their guns on them. They're dirty. They just got off a dude, they're staring at us like with just stone faces. And we're like, well, let's just do what we can, do our best we can and give them a show. And we went up and they were appreciative and they were with us, but you didn't feel great about your set. And I got off stage, and after the show, the bass officer went up and thanked us and then said, we really needed it. We just were attacked 3 days ago and we lost a couple people, so we really needed this comedy. And that was the most, that was a moment of, you don't know what's going on in the person in the audience's head. All you can do is your best and hope they enjoy it. And after they, everybody wanted to come and talk to us. Meanwhile, during the show, we thought we bombed. We thought it went horrible.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
And they were just like, you just realize like they lost their buddy like just a couple days ago. So it was a really life changing moment of like, don't judge the crowd, just give them the best you can, and you know, you never know what's happening on their end.
Yeah, can I just say that totally blows my story away, Mark. My little kiss and tell ass story compared to that.
Oh, well, we're not playing Topper Harley.
Well, I think we are.
It's always a competition with you.
Well, can I give you a good street joke before we end this?
So, Joey, you close us out with a great street joke, and then we're going to – don't go away. There's going to be a little sketch right after, and then, Joey, stay in the green room. Don't X out.
Yeah.
Because I got to go now because I got to
go.
Ready?
Let's hit it.
All right. Three guys are sleeping in the bed. The guy on the left side said, I had a dream. Somebody was touching me last night. The guy on the right side said, I had the same dream. Somebody was touching me last night. The guy in the middle said, I had a dream I was skiing last night.
That's Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling, folks.
Joey Cole.
Joey.
Gens of Revolution!
Who's the boss?
And the boss.
Ryan McGinnis to the person. Mark McAdonna.
And what this?
It's amazing. Angela, light him up! Good high school. It's amazing. Uh-oh. Who's the boss?
Amazing. Well, hell. Mona Bonus.
The boss!
Last call!
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.